The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the Kiefer and Curry. We do the show every single week, and it runs at least five times a week on the TKR app, where you can listen to it live. We just did a very special Need to Know, which was just amazing. We had I-Man. It's the first time I actually got to see I-Man on his face. I've heard his voice many, many times. Of course, he didn't know me from Adam's House Cat, but I've heard him many, many times. And of course, that was nice that you allowed Legend to actually run that interview. I-Man having some difficulties with cancer throughout his body. So very, very good. Now, Need to Know, if you get a chance to check that out on Tony Curry Radio. We'll put that up on every place where you can find your podcast. So make sure you check it out. It'll change the way you think about cancer.
Every man should look at it. And I thought those guys did a great job, Tony, of just being really frank with that discussion. They started off by saying, no holds barred. We're just going to let it out here. They were rivals for a long time on the Feinbaum show and have become really close friends. And Legend said that I-Man really was looking for some place to tell his story and just kind of put up the red flag for all men to get regular checkups because, you know, he said he was feeling fine, had no problem, wakes up one morning with a terrible pain in his hip and goes thinking it's some kind of bone related. And it is. It's bone cancer that is spread from his prostate. That's pretty terrifying to think about, but you can, you know, I thought it was interesting too. We don't need to review the whole show, but he said, just go to your local doc in the box. They can do a simple PSA test on a regular basis on you. And you know that you don't have that issue. Yep. So that is great advice for everybody.
Yeah. They don't have to do the finger test anymore. As a matter of fact, most doctors don't.
Not too pleasant.
But yeah, quick little blood test and you can figure something out pretty quick. So make sure you do that. And again, it's one of those things where it's not terminal. It's certainly something you can deal with, but the sooner you get a track with it, the sooner you can start getting to work on it. So that's good. Would Alabama consider hiring Dabo Swinney as their next head coach?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I think he's a native son and he would certainly be a candidate if that situation presented itself. I don't think he's really burned the bridge. I don't think, you know, they're so persnickety down in Tuscaloosa, the big boys in the boardroom. They wouldn't even consider Lane Kiffin because they think he's flippant and irresponsible, not even acknowledging that he has come a long way in terms of his maturity level. But they didn't even consider him before getting Kalen DeBoer because, you know, he had, for lack of a better term, pissed a bunch of people off down there. But it doesn't take much to do that. So I don't know enough about Dabo's. I know he's beaten Alabama a couple times in big games and won some national championships, including the one in out in Santa Clara where Clemson just ran them in the ground. But I think he would get serious consideration if that took place again. But you know, I don't know. It's a fascinating question. Somebody asked me this weekend on one of my shows, if things continue the way they are, Shane Beamer, will he leave South Carolina to take the Virginia Tech job? Cause they've got an interim coach now. That was an interesting question. All this coaching carousel is a fascinating topic these days in college football. And you just wonder about the politics more than the qualifications of the coach to be able to answer that question.
South Carolina giving up 6.5 against the Kentucky Wildcats. And this is a team, of course, I had going to the playoffs. Man, my futures look like shit. I mean, I had Clemson winning a national title this year, and maybe it's because my boy goes to school there, so I've got some financial interest in it. I got to ask you about this because you're as smart as anybody else out there that looks at tape, follows games, just because perhaps you didn't have a 10-year career in the National Football League doesn't mean you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But Has the Game Pass Dabo buy? Am I? What am I missing here? He brings back his three best wide receivers. Talk of clubbing. He's got 36 touchdowns and six picks last year. Oh, listen, I realize he wasn't in the Heisman Trophy account. So I mean, but he still, he was a great game manager. He's got wheels. He's made some plays with his feet. Now they lost their running game. They have absolutely no running game, and he refuses to use the transfer portal. I'm talking about Dabo Swinney.
Yeah,
but that looked pretty brilliant at the end of last season when he rolled off. And I know that you said they didn't play anybody. Blah blah blah. You got to play who's on your schedule. They won 10 games, right? And so there's no reason why they shouldn't have been a preseason top 10 team with everything they had coming back.
No, I never questioned that. I questioned the fact that people considered them one of the co-favorites to win the national championship. Yeah. And the reason that I questioned that is when I saw them play the elite competition, teams that were actual contenders for that last year, I saw two basic blowouts. Their games against Georgia and Texas, they were never really in those games. So that told me right then that, you know, I'm keen to who's coming back, and you know, everybody was throwing around that stat. I heard everything from some people were saying 80% of their productivity is coming back. Others were more precise and said 72. But I said, you know, on the biggest stage, and not only that, they lost two other games. I thought the loss late last season, which may have kind of pushed you in the South Carolina direction. When South Carolina came into Clemson last year, the last week of the season, and beat Clemson, who on basically had to win that game or it looked like their playoff hopes were going to be gone. But then they still got in because Miami went to Syracuse later that day, blew a 15-point lead and laid an egg that handed Clemson the berth in the championship game. But, you know, beating SMU, and everybody played that game up to be such an epic battle. SMU turned out to be just kind of an ordinary school that didn't play any of the top teams hardly in the ACC last year. And SMU even got in as a result of that game. I don't know. I just had a few questions. I wasn't down on Clemson, but and I've never been drinking the Kool-Aid with Cade Klubnik either. I think this year you're seeing a quarterback that and I think you may have hit the biggest key. If you can't run the ball, it really puts a lot of pressure on a quarterback that he's got to play almost perfectly because defense starts selling out and taking away the routes, and Klubnik's just been off. And I know you and I even had a discussion last spring before you kind of, and I won't say you changed positions, but you started thinking more strongly about Clemson. But you even said to me, Klubnik missed a lot of throws last year. You said, I went to a lot of games. He overthrew guys. He underthrew them. I mean, you were still kind of, the jury was out on Klubnik, and then you kind of went all in. So,
were there three wide receivers come back? I realized Williams was banged up early in the season. If they had any semblance of a running game, and their defense looked like the defense. This team doesn't look like they want to play football. I don't know. I don't know.
There's
something's not right. And let me tell you something. When you're up on the podium talking about, you know, winning the division or winning your conference the last 10 years, making the playoffs, and making
win here. Yeah.
Yeah. And if they don't like that, then I'll go somewhere else. I'm only 55. Yeah, but what are you doing? What are you doing? I mean, he does not need to be going that direction.
He's his own worst enemy.
He really is.
He was contrite this week because I had the queen of all press conferences monitoring everything. And she said Dabo was classy and gave credit to Syracuse and Fran Brown. I mean, you play enough tough games on your schedule. You better be ready to play every week. I think I might be as distressed so far this year of the law of the win, the only win they have to Troy. They were down 16 points and came back to win that game. But that's not what Clemson should be doing at home against Troy.
And they lost by 7 to LSU. But who is LSU beating? I mean, they beat Southeastern Louisiana. They knocked out Louisiana Tech. I mean, they beat Florida and they win. Listen, you talk about road wins. They beat Clemson on the road by 7. That's a good victory. I don't give
that's a huge.
I don't care how good Clemson is. That's a good win.
That's a great win.
Yeah, that's a great win. But, so.
And that was the other thing I worried about because, you know, I really look at schedules preseason, and I looked at Clemson's schedule, and I said, the LSU game's a toss-up.
Yeah.
You know, that's even at Clemson, a first game. I don't know why anybody schedules those kinds of games. In this era, you look at Penn State. Game day is going to be in Happy Valley this week. Yep. They're the number two team in the country, Tony, based on what?
Yep.
They've played Nevada. They've played Florida International, and they have played Villanova. Did Ed Pinckney come on the field for Villanova, who won the national basketball championship for him about 25 years ago? I mean, I didn't know Villanova even played football. Yep. I mean, that is just the biggest joke, and yet they're ranked number two because they didn't play LSU. Yep. They didn't play at Georgia Tech at an 11 o'clock Saturday game. Well, now,
hold on. Just back up just for a second. We've only played 3 or 4 games here. Okay. Yeah. And everyone's playing these cupcakes. I mean, I get that. Everyone's playing with the exception of several games, because we really haven't had any monster games. And last week's game, for God's sakes, last week's best game was Texas Tech, Utah. Give me a fucking break. I mean, it's ridiculous, yeah. Right?
You're right.
So, I mean, that was the best game last week. That's ridiculous. Three weeks in the season. So I know what you're saying. If you're not going to put Oregon number two, and obviously you have preseason polls, dude, you know how the politics of how this works. We have to have preseason polls. We love it. We love talking about it. If you're not going to put Oregon number two, where would you put them? My question is just based on what you've seen from them or Penn State or anyone else for that matter, where would you have to put them somewhere? And I know they haven't played anybody, but I mean, if you're not going to play anybody, like we said before, play. Now, I will say this. Indiana looks like a little bit of a different team than what I thought I was going to see this past weekend, too. They put roughshod on Illinois. I didn't think Indiana was going to look that good, but is Illinois that good? So I don't know. Now,
well, Illinois' only win was against Duke, who did acquit themselves well this week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least that's one legitimate opponent. Indiana also got that game at home. Kirk Cignetti, who used to be a Saban assistant, who's been at Indiana for 2 years, everything has been falling in schedule-wise so well for him. They started with just even a more embarrassing group of cupcakes, including Kennesaw State, which was a big challenge. But maybe Illinois Illinois was the number 9 team in the country for beating Duke.
That's a top 10 win. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. You know how much I have a problem with the whole structure, because I keep saying over and over, and people are sick of it. It's not how you play. It's who you play in these early weeks. It was such a relief to me to at least see a couple of SEC league games. Of course, the Auburn game mired by controversy now, with Oklahoma running basically an illegal play and the SEC officials and completely missing it.
Yeah, I mean,
the controversial fumble. That Sean McDonough and Greg McElroy, who's seen a little bit of football. So that was absolutely a fumble. But, you know, Tony, we spent a lot of time yesterday on The Morning After, my show here locally, talking about, and everybody's calling and saying, well, I want to see people's forensic studies of their bank accounts, who got paid off in the replay booth in Birmingham, et cetera, et cetera. Corruption, they're screaming from the heavens. I think, Tony, and you let me know what you think about this. I think the problem with officiating, particularly in the SEC, is, first of all, these are not professionals. These are house framers and insurance guys and high school principals. This is a good old boy network. Greg Sankey, the commissioner, originally gave it to Steve Shaw, a former on-field official who was and I know you know Steve from your long broadcast career here. I think Steve's a good guy, but those guys have the opinion that they know everything and nobody else knows not a thing. So when the inmates are running the asylum, you put a former officials in charge. They hire a guy who knows a guy who's related to a guy. And all of a sudden I don't think it's corruption or cheating or making calls in favor. I think it's just flat out ineptitude.
And it's only going to get worse with now the SEC and the Big Ten running the show.
I agree.
Those are the two. It's only going to get worse.
You have to have, This is a big money enterprise. You have to have professional officials, and you have to get the replay system to run efficiently. It's still ridiculous. I thought they'd gotten rid of the Cro-Magnon official who did the first Harvard-Yale game in 1892, but they're still up in the replay booth. So there's all these layers before it even gets to Birmingham.
Yeah.
What? And now I even noticed some SEC games, the referee is running to a monitor. So you've got all these people in the soup. I thought it was great. Last week, in the AC, in the Clemson Georgia Tech game, matter of fact, they actually had a lot of controversy in the ACC the week before. One official resigned after a game from the locker room. He said, "I'm done. That's my last game." Well, the next week they made it transparent. The referee's communication with the replay center in Charlotte was broadcast throughout that game, and I thought that was fantastic. That was great transparency. You saw exactly how the process worked. And of course, they were buttoned down and very precise. Okay, here's what we're looking at. And the referee goes, okay, block back and forth. I think that's what's got to happen. But I think you got to get outside people, management people, efficiency experts, technical experts to get involved in there, because you leave that to the good old boys. How often, Tony, do you think calls are left alone or they're reluctant to overturn because they don't want to offend old Jim Reynolds, the back judge at the game? I've been knowing Jim for 25 years.
Yeah.
And you and I are both big baseball guys. You know, baseball quit doing this. Remember, for a couple of years, they had crews that were not working on the field. They would rotate, and the crew might be in Boston one weekend and Toronto the next, but the next weekend they were assigned to New York to be the replay guys.
Yep.
And you know, those guys were worried about offending their colleagues by overturning their call.
Sure. Absolutely.
I think you've got a lot of that going on in the good old boy network of college football.
By the way, my Cincinnati Reds right now in the wild card position after rolling out their fifth wave last night. So I'm hoping with about five or six games left, they have a shot.
This time last week, they only had a 7.5% chance or whatever. So you have improved your position greatly.
I'm going to throw you some games. Have you seen the lines yet?
No, absolutely not.
Man, these are crazy. It's just crazy. Ohio State at Washington.
Ohio State's probably a 10-point favorite.
8.5.
Yeah.
Tennessee at Mississippi State.
Yeah, now isn't that a fascinating game?
Yes, it is. It really,
every Tennessee
it really
fan
is.
Before the season said, "Oh, there's a walkover." Mm-hmm. Where, you know, Mississippi State, great. We'll go to Stark Vegas and have a big time.
Yeah,
maybe commute with some farm animals and such. But I bet that game, the way Mississippi State has been a giant killer already, knocking off Arizona State. I'm going to imagine Tennessee's maybe 5?
7.5.
Okay, a little more than I thought.
Yeah. Oregon at Penn State.
Yeah, the college game day, the Pat McAfee show will be there.
Yeah.
And you know what, Tony? Good for them. Pick those games. I'm still baffled. I'm going to have to do some research. That game is on NBC on Saturday night. NBC, I know, has Notre Dame. How in the hell do they have a Big Ten game of that magnitude? Did they pay Fox off and say, "Hey, we need more football property"? That must be what happened. When I saw NBC pitching that last night, I was going, "How in the hell is that going to be on NBC?"
I think they have their pick. I think it's like the JP games where you had to be a one, and then you get like one pick of the year or something like that. And they went
that makes sense.
Penn State's giving up 3.5 in that ball game, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know if you're all geeked for that, but the fact that the Alabama Georgia game is not college game day. Alabama and Georgia have been the two dominant programs, along with Clemson. Let's throw them in there too, in this century. An Alabama Georgia game is marquee, big time. There is no rivalry whatsoever between Oregon and Penn State. No. They're in different parts of the country. I just for the fact that game day is going there, good guys, go knock yourself out. But you know what that's great for, Tony? You, me, and the rest of our cast of characters at the starting lineup on ABC 3340.
Yeah, baby.
Because Southeastern Conference fans don't give a happy crap about Happy Valley, Penn State, or Oregon.
Auburn at A&M.
Yeah, I'm going to say A&M will probably... Auburn made a good showing.
This is a really interesting line because it's the same damn line it was against Oklahoma.
Oh, see, I was going to say only four. It's six or six it's and a
six,
half.
Six
huh?
and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. I would right now, just off the cuff, I would have to take Auburn. I think they're every bit as good as A&M, who I've been high on this year. But again, you know, yes, Auburn had a lot of controversy in this game. The touchdown that was called back, the illegal touchdown that the SEC office, I'm sure you saw, came out with a statement right away on Sunday morning, which I don't know, maybe it was the janitor that issued it because I can't imagine any of the executives being there, but that they blew that call. Take a breath.
If a guy makes an unbelievable catch, okay. And his foot's down in the end zone.
Yeah.
But the ball's moving in his hand. But he catches the ball all the way to the ground. And yeah. It doesn't give him the damn catch. It was a hell of a catch. And his foot was down. Was the ball moving just minuscule? Yes. But for God's sakes, I mean, and now guys are catching with one hand. How the hell can you even tell? If it looks like a great catch, if it smells like a duck and looks like a duck is a duck, everybody in the world knew that was a fumble. How in the hell did they look at that and not one of those knuckleheads go, guys, come on, this is a fumble. I mean, I I'm like thinking to myself, that's where I actually think there's some conspiratorial. You may be right on that. I thought for sure you were full of shit. I thought for sure, oh, come on. Someone's saying there's money on the game. Are you serious? Seriously? But now I'm starting to think to myself, how in the world did everybody in the country get that right? And then they got it wrong.
Yeah, that rule, somebody somewhere needs to get a little bit of a dose of common sense. That stupid control the ball to the ground rule, you have to have the ball totally secured, all that, it opens up so much. It's not a rule that it becomes totally a judgment thing. Later in the game on Oklahoma's winning drive, I'm sure you saw the play, the big play that set them up in Auburn territory. Mateer on third down made a great throw on the sidelines. The kid caught it, secured it, took and was running out of bounds, had it clearly. As soon as he set one step out of bounds, his other foot went through after getting one foot down. He took two full strides out of bounds. The Auburn kid drug him down. The ball came out and the call on the field was no catch because he didn't control to the ground. Yep. He'd been out of bounds for two strides. I mean, these guys don't know how to call that play. There's such confusion about this control and all the way to the ground stuff. We saw a couple calls in previous weeks. They've got to look at that and get it defined because this has been a problem since it was defined years ago. Remember, it was in the NFL. The first time we saw it rear its ugly head, Calvin Johnson caught an apparent game-winning touchdown in the game. I don't know if you remember. He leaped way high in the air. Calvin Johnson was already 6'7" or whatever. Snagged it with both of his massive hands, pulled it down to his chest, landed with both feet in the end zone, then was clobbered by a guy and went down and the ball came out and they said, don't catch, game over. Yeah. Sorry, Detroit, you lose. I mean, this has been going on for 8 or 9 years. Let somebody figure out what this rule is and let's start calling it consistently because
if it looks like a catch, it's a catch. And now we're talking millions of dollars. This is, you know, we've been saying this forever. College football has been a business forever. We know that, but now it is a business. It is truly a business. You're costing these kids millions of dollars. I think one of the reasons that I'm in a little bit of a tizzy going to this football season is I'm afraid there's not. I like when there's a couple of teams that are really, really good and I can rely on them. Yeah. I can't rely on Alabama this year. I can't rely on Georgia. I can't rely on Ohio State. I can't rely on Texas. And so am I supposed to rely on 4-0 LSU going to 4-0 Ole Miss? Whoever wins this game is going to have the inside track to win the SEC. What do you think the line is on that? LSU at Ole Miss this weekend.
That's got to be, I imagine LSU's a slight favorite, which is, I think is probably ridiculous.
Ole Miss but, 2.5.
Yeah, I was going to say 3, so that's Ole Miss is 3.
Ole Miss is 2.5, yeah.
Oh, that might get me. I think if there ever was a pick'em, this should be it. Because let's give Ole Miss credit. They got it together this week and really thumped what was supposed to be a good Tulane team. But last week, Arkansas just shredded their defense. Yeah. So I don't know. Brian Kelly keeps saying Nussmeier's not 100%. I don't know if that's an excuse or if that's real. He's sure not missing any time. But we were talking about Clemson a little bit. LSU can't run the ball either. No. If you don't have a running game at this level of college football or any level of football, remember what the SEC, the big standard always was, you got to run the ball and stop the run. That was the creed. Now they're getting away from that. So it makes these games really unpredictable.
And do you remember some of those running backs that you had for Alabama? You had Lacy, you had Ingram, you had Trent Richardson, you had Henry. I mean, you had every year you had a guy that could run the ball 20 times in a row. And you don't still see that in college football anymore. Notre Dame, 1-2.
At Arkansas. What culture shock for the Golden Domers going to Fayetteville. First, they're probably going to have to switch to a school bus at some point because the roads are too narrow for any kind of major transportation.
And Notre Dame, for they're not part of a conference. I've always said this, Notre Dame for years would not play an FCS school. It would not play St. Mary's, but even if they were lower tier, they would not play the Kennesaw States. They never did. Now they're willing to play them now, but every single year they always played Georgia. They always played USC. They always played schools from the Big Ten. And I always said, man, schedule wise, their schedule was always brutal. This year it has been absolutely brutal. What's the line on Notre Dame at Arkansas?
I think they'll make Notre Dame a favorite, maybe, but less than so. I'm going to say 5.5.
Wow, 5.5. How? I mean, you're right. You're spot on. But I mean, this is an Arkansas squad. They were talking about Arkansas State getting inside the number, and now all of a sudden, Coach Pittman's only a 5.5-point dog at home against Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's just such a weird game for Notre Dame to be playing.
It really is.
And you wonder about that. And Arkansas now. My desperate team scenario didn't work a couple places this past week. I thought you'd see Florida's best effort. And I will say it turned out to be a 27-6 or 26-7 final, but that game, Florida came up a foot short of making a fourth down with 6 minutes left in the game, down 13-7. They would have had it first down on the Miami 29, but the kid ran the route too short and they didn't get the first down. And then the last couple of positions, Florida just kind of threw in the towel. That game was competitive. I think Arkansas is in that position now because, Tony, there can't be a coaching staff more sick to their stomach. The last 2 weeks, they just lit Ole Miss up and completely let that game get away with two late turnovers that killed. Ole Miss didn't stop their offense the whole game till the last two, and two fumbles did the Arkansas team in. And then they led 28-10 at Memphis this past weekend at halftime and let Memphis, well, actually it was 28-17. Memphis scored in a last 2 minute drill at the end of the half. Arkansas only scored 3 points in the second half and lose that game 32-31. Those guys got to be sick. That's two games they should have won, and they come home with two losses. So I think a desperate Hog team is going to be greeting Notre Dame. But I, from a physical standpoint, I just don't think Arkansas probably, they match up because they're huge, but they're huge and slow. And I don't know. Notre Dame should outclass them, but boy, I'm not going to be very comfortable wagering anything of value on Notre Dame playing in such a bizarre circumstance as Fayetteville, Arkansas.
They start 1-3 with that schedule, man. It's like, holy smokes, they're still the one, best 1-3 team in college football. If in fact they lose, by the way, you had the over 62 in that Arkansas game. Kudos to you. And I had the under in that Miami, Florida game,
you
under
did.
51.5. So we, both of us, were winner chicken dinners on some of our totals. We did pretty well there. USC at Illinois. Illinois just got spanked.
Yeah, they didn't look so good.
No, they really didn't. Hey, listen, they're not their defense is not 63 points bad. Okay, sometimes the game just gets away from you, and it just, they just threw their hats in. They were like, enough of it. I mean, they just absolutely made them look bad. So I'm assuming that Illinois is going to bite back this weekend and play a pretty good game against a USC squad that's undefeated.
Yeah, but let's talk about USC's win this past weekend. They played Michigan State, who is absolutely abysmal, and they surrendered. You always hear Lincoln Riley is doing this. He's bringing this coordinator in. They've got a bunch of defensive reinforcements. Lincoln Riley's teams all the way back 8-9 years ago to Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley never ever has a good defense. They give up 31 points in the Coliseum against Michigan State Saturday night. They won 45-31, but is that a quality win at home against Michigan State? No. I don't think so.
I can't remember the last time Michigan State scored 31 points against anybody.
Well, that's the thing. Lincoln Riley is the most bizarre coach in the world. He always puts up points, but even those Oklahoma teams, the defense never was any good, and that's just his MO. You would think that somebody would say, "Yo, Lincoln, let's change a few things and get a few guys that can tackle somebody."
Go to the portal.
Because their defense always is abysmal.
That line, by the way, is Illinois catching 7 at home. The Fighting Illini. That line's 7, and that's. I thought it would have been closer to 4 or 5. Yeah, there's some.
Yeah, I would take Illinois on there. I don't think they're any good, but USC can score, but. Last year, if you go back, and I think our partner on our podcast, Kai, mentioned this, and I emphatically agreed, and Cases was on this too. The teams in the Big Ten, the four new teams that came in, Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA, their record flying east for these road games in the Big Ten last year was horrible. I don't remember it off the top of my head. It was something like, 8-21. I mean, it was really, really bad. So it seems like the teams flying west to east have a tougher time than vice versa. And a lot of times, if it's an 11 o'clock kick here in Birmingham or a noon Eastern kick, that's 9 a.m. Pacific time. We've had a couple of those examples already.
Yeah, it's weird.
I know Kai a couple weeks ago was really high on Oregon just blowing Northwestern away. Northwestern covered that game because they kicked off at 9 o'clock. Oregon didn't show up till the second quarter.
They backdoored their ass too with a quick little 14.
They did.
Yeah. When you get backdoored, when you have to get backdoored twice, that means you're letting them in the back door and you're escorting them out, and they come back and backdoor you again, which is what happened that game. I actually had to kind of laugh at that because I thought that was kind of funny. Alabama at Georgia. Georgia only giving up, it was open at 4. Now it's 3.
What do you think about that?
Tennessee should have won the football
Alabama
game.
Alabama Nation yesterday on the morning after. I've heard all the things they always say, and again, I'm torn always. I grew up in Atlanta. I wasn't a fanatical Georgia fan, but that's who I followed because that's where I lived. But I've lived in Birmingham a lot longer than I lived in Atlanta now. Mm-hmm. And the centerpiece of course, any sports media I've done for the last 25 years has been the Alabama Crimson Tide. My youngest son went there, is a proud graduate and a fanatical fan. But I got labeled yesterday on social media as a Georgia homer and all that, obvious, only because I sound the alert that I'm not drinking the toxic Kool-Aid. Well, we own Georgia. We always beat Georgia. Well, they didn't always beat them in Indianapolis for the national championship in 2021. And Kirby Smart has never in his Georgia tenure had Alabama on the Sanford Stadium turf. This is the first time that Georgia's hosted a game. Kirby's 1-5 against Alabama. That's a fact. But three of those games were in Atlanta.
Yeah, and the majority of those were against Nick Saban. You know, what's really weird if there was breaking news that Kalen DeBoer, I don't know, fell off a cliff, and Nick Saban came in a half an hour before kickoff and was going to coach this game, that line would move 6 points.
Oh, it would.
Alabama would be favored by 3.5 or 4 points in this game if Nick Saban were the coach this weekend. Do you not think so? And I've never seen a coach worth that much to anybody. But for Alabama right now, that's how much this game would be worth.
You're absolutely right. And I do think, I really believe there is some merit to, as great a coach as Kirby Smart has been, I think Kirby overthought matchups with Nick Saban. I think Kirby worked with him long enough where Kirby's gone, okay, I think I know what Nick's going to do. It was like a chess match more than a coaching matchup. And most of the time, Kirby got owned because, you know, Saban found a way to beat him over and over. But, you know, the one matchup, and people were saying, well, what about last year? Alabama won. Alabama, Tony, led 32-7 at halftime. And with 4 minutes left in the game, Georgia scored to go ahead in that game. So, you know, Hollywood
Williams. That was crazy. Carson Beck, great game for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Hollywood Williams made an unbelievable play. Georgia misplayed that. He spun away from two guys that were right there to bring him down. Alabama took the lead, but people forget Carson Beck brought Georgia all the way back down the field. And with 41 seconds left, they had the ball at the 13 yard line. He had a receiver open in the end zone, but threw it too flat. The freshman for Alabama, Xavier, I can't remember his last name, made a jumping, leaping, high point interception.
Great interception.
So,
yeah.
Georgia was that close to winning the game twice from behind. So, but Alabama fans are acting like it was just a walk in the park. And I contend, Tony, after that second half collapse last year for Alabama, that's when all the trouble started. Alabama wasn't the same team after that Georgia game. They went to Vanderbilt the next week and lost in Nashville.
You're right. They were not. And that was a great game. And I remember listening to that first half. I was actually walking back from Death Valley, Clemson. It said it was like 2.3 miles and we could not get an Uber. And I said, Santa, let's walk. We ended up having to walk along the interstate.
And I
had the phone up and we had to walk single file because we were going to get hit by a car.
Yeah, so I remember your story
So I'm holding the phone up and he's looking back going, it's 4th and 13. I'm like, okay, let me know what's going on. And we're listening to the ball game. We're like jumping up and down on the sideline. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, Bama is just, I mean, this is a dominant game. And then the fact that they actually almost came back and were down in that game late in the game. And after that, Carson Beck's Heisman Trophy through the roof, brother, because it was him and Milroe. It was those two guys. Whoever was going to win that football game was going to win the Heisman Trophy last year at that point in time. And good for him too, by the way, having just a fantastic season down at the U. He's doing fantastic. That's going to be a great ball game. But again, if you win between the hedges, that would be a great win. Where's Georgia's defense this year? Man, what they did to Tennessee this past
week. But you know, I people keep saying they've got defensive problems. Who in the SEC playing their first SEC game of the year going into Neyland Stadium? Tell me a team in the SEC that would have gone and done better on defense. I mean, Georgia's got and I'll give Josh Heupel credit. He went with the blitzkrieg early. He knew Kirby Smart had a tendency because Tennessee in recent years has, like with Dylan Sampson last year, Tennessee ran the ball 75% of the time. Almost all their yards were on the ground. Brilliant game plan for Heupel to attack. Georgia had 2 5-star corners, but they were making their first career SEC start on the road at Neyland Stadium, and Heupel absolutely blitzed them. There were a couple of those touchdowns that were balls that were deflected and guys made great plays. I mean, it looked a lot worse than it ended up being. True. And but Kirby then made the adjustments, took away the safety cheating up to take away the run, went to more of a deep zone coverage. They took away the deep ball for Tennessee, and Georgia was about to take complete command of that game and fritted away a turnover in Tennessee territory. Tennessee hit another bomb that got them. The game just kind of went back and forth, but in that environment for Georgia to walk out of there with a win, it's easy to say they've got defensive deficiencies. I want to see it in Athens with this Alabama offense. I don't think you're going to see the Georgia defense that got blitzkrieged for 38 points or whatever in that game, or I don't 44-41 was the final. That's right. So they gave up a lot of points. I don't think that's the Georgia defense you're going to see here. And I think Kirby Smart almost had that smug Nick Saban look on his face of, okay, this is a disaster, but we got out of here with a win. Yep. Now I'm going to go and bust some asses, and this is not going to happen again. Saban always, Saban's one of the great things about him as a coach, he wanted to win, but he also wanted the team to play just bad enough where he could get on their ass on Monday.
He sure did. And
Kirby's out of that same cloth.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And it's going to be cooling off this weekend. It's going to be fantastic. ABC 3340, the starting lineup. We're going to get after it again on Saturday morning from 10:30, 11 o'clock. We'll be breaking down our games with our bankroll here.
Don't watch Pat McAfee and his speedo. Watch Kip Kiefer and Tony Curry. We'll be fully clothed.
Our numbers are better anyway. We'll get after it. It's going to be big time. And then we're at the Birmingham Racecourse and Casino. Is that tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night. Yeah, we're looking forward to that. We're going to have a big time.
I'm going to have to figure out.
Tony, our other little enterprise, K4 Wins. Man, I saw the number this morning about our college football performance so far this year. What numbers we're generating?
Yeah, so what, 16-3, I think, on Saturday? And overall, Kai
41-13 or something for the year. I mean, it's ridiculous we're doing.
Yeah, we're on fire, man. It only took about a week for us to get off the ground and get after it. So make sure you check out K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com, and check out our website, and you can get your plays. And then, of course, just listen to the show, or if you just listen to our shows, you're probably going to get our picks throughout the week anyway. So, and of course, we also have our K4Wins show going on tomorrow, also on the Digital Coastal Sports Network, 10 o'clock on Tuesdays and Fridays. So it's going to be huge. I'm losing my voice, my friends, so I'm gonna let you fly. We're gonna get after it. I'll see you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it. If you're in the Birmingham area, be at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino tomorrow night, fourth floor. Meet the legendary Tony Curry and the legend himself. He'll be there as well. We want to see everybody out there, so come on and enjoy a little football pregame week kickoff party at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.